This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be chilling out with Angela D. Coleman, and she's written a fantastic book called The Art of Chilling Out for Women. And I'm looking forward to talking to her. And it's so funny, today I have two guests who both have Angel in their name. Angela is at the bottom of the hour, and right now I'm going to turn to Angeline Bouley. I am so happy to welcome you to the program, Angeline. Oh, I hope I'm I'm just waiting for her. Are you there, Angeline? Well, this is it's a fantastic book, and so I'm really looking. No. Wait, who's on?
Angela.
Wait, no, Angela?
Hello.
Yeah, hi, Angela?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hi.
Hi, Patty. How are you?
Okay. Well, I thought you were at the bottom of the hour. But, Angela, it's wonderful that you're going to be talking today about chilling out. My goodness, do we need to chill out? So, the name of the book is The Art of Chilling Out for Women, and it is, I think every woman out there needs this book. It's called Transform Burned Out into Chilled Out, and 100 plus ways to replace worry and stress with spiritual healing, self-care, and self-love.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, good morning. You know, Angela, it is so important in this day and age, and we are all so stressed out. And as we've just coming now into the summer, people need to have, I think, take a deep breath and mentally chill out as much as they're going to need to chill out because of the hot weather.
Yes, and because you're in Clearwater, Florida, it's a beautiful, beautiful location to really take advantage of the healing waters and the ocean. I mean, it's just the air, salt air, listening to the waves. It's a perfect spot. That could be a sacred spot.
It is. And the wonderful thing about reading your book, I think it's so clever the way you've done it. You've really made it very easy for people to take your advice, because each section is divided into an area where you have a call to action, wonderful, you know, ideas for what people can actually do. And this is so important. Sometimes people will read and they'll say, well, what am I supposed to do? But in this case, you have the call to action. Then you talk about Mother Nature and how that affects what we're going to do. And then, of course, gemstones, which I love. And then Feng Shui. So by giving all of this advice in little snippets, I think it's really helpful. People can pick up the book and find, as they read it, start getting the idea of how they can chill out. So how'd you get this idea to write this book?
Well, you know, through the course of my life, I've had to navigate the waters of work and family balance and really carving out time for my own space and restoration and relaxation. And as I have been just interacting with more and more women, especially with my nonprofit Sisterhood Agenda, I've realized that, you know, we aren't honoring ourselves and the rather very natural rhythm of life and the cycle of productivity and rest, recognizing that nothing can burn forever beyond 100%, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of the year without eventually experiencing some kind of burnout, that even if you turn it off for even just a little while, you can reset, you can rejuvenate and get started again. And a lot of the women that I've talked to, especially during the pandemic, we've been hearing about how overwhelming it is to have the first shift where you're maybe outside of the home working, or even inside the home working, and then you have the second shift with the kids in school, and then the third shift of, you know, dinner and after dinner, et cetera. And that these present very specific challenges to us as women, so that we need to kind of reclaim our space a little bit, and reclaiming the space for ourselves and making the time to chill out. The art of chilling out is saying that this is how we maintain our holistic health, our spiritual, mental, and physical health, because if we don't take charge of it and choose to do it, our bodies do it for us. And we don't want to have a medical event or have very, you know, negative health outcomes as a result, just because we're not able to relax ourselves, because we're not able to chill out.
Well, somewhere along the line, I think you probably needed it, because you are like an example of a major overachiever. You must have had many years of, I don't know, it sounds like a lot of stress with all of the things you've done. I mean, not only are you a summa cum laude from Princeton University, and then you went on to Howard University, and then, my goodness, you weren't done and you had to go to Duke. So, like, you were really, you were on the go.
I was on the go. I was running my agency and another business as well, going to school. And I've had to learn the hard way. My body would tell me and it would just shut down. And I had to recognize that it's in my control, that I possess the power and the free will to do this differently, and to recognize how I can do this differently as an act of love for myself, but also for my family, you know, for the causes that I care so deeply about, and in order to position myself to do the things that I really want to do. So I still want to do those things, but there's a time and a place, and there's a rhythm to it. And now I honor and respect that process. And well, that's why I wrote the book, to teach other people.
Yeah. Well, it's great, because I think with your work in psychology, and also you've done work with trauma, right? So you know what happens when we get overwhelmed, and the physical, the mental, the breakdowns that people can have because of it. The pandemic didn't help. And I think the way you've laid the book out, as I said, with these four areas in each subject, giving real sort of real world suggestions on how to do things. Like, tell us particularly, let's take one of them. I like, of course, all the chapters, but one of the important one, and this is where we really almost have to start, is that listen to your physical self.
Yes. There's a chapter called Reduce Body Distress and Discover Your Body Parameters. And that's really looking at, hey, We give indications. Our body tells us things all the time of what is going on with our body and going on in our environment, and when we need to rest, when we need to chill out. But we sometimes override that with logic. You know, we might override that with our mind. We might override that with, oh, well, we have so much to do, and, oh, I can do it. I'll get an extra cup of coffee, or, you know, I'll just do an all-nighter, or I'll stay up tonight. I'll catch up on sleep later. And Discover Your Body Parameters is all about your personal history, because we can't maintain a state of fight or flight. That's the survival mechanism. But it shouldn't be our everyday state. And when you're in it too long, your body can suffer from exhaustion, because you're constantly ready to fight or flight. So in that state, and understanding how to de-escalate, how to find a peace and calm. We have to relearn how to do this. We knew how to do this when we were young, but we somehow got conditioned that it's okay to keep going and to override our body barometers. And so now we need to listen again, to tune in, and because your body knows like when you're not supposed to be somewhere, you know, where if it's not safe emotionally, physically, or if it's under stress or duress. Body can sense that, and we just have to listen to what your unique body barometers are. It could be a heightened heartbeat. It could be perspiration. It could be a sense of humor, overwhelm, or it can be just anxiety. You can feel also negative vibrations. You can feel negative vibes. At the same time, your body will let you know when things are great and wonderful and you're happy. So these are all ways to protect ourselves. And so becoming more aware of them helps you to learn and master the art of chilling out.
Well, when we hear that expression, you know, wake up and smell the coffee, but it's really wake up and smell the roses. I was so blessed, really, that I was raised in a place where we had lilacs. We had, for my childhood is such a memory of having lilacs, that smell. And I love that you mentioned, you mentioned that in your section here about Mother Nature, you talk about the smell of things. You mentioned gardenias, which also, I love gardenias.
Yeah. And those things are so healing.
It is, and people don't realize it. And you know, and you can actually raise gardenias because they're very expensive to buy. But I remember my sister was very popular in high school. She was really popular, and she would be going out on those days and on real dates. And I don't know how she convinced guys to always bring her gardenias. And I remember, as a little girl, I would just run up to her and just snuggle against her because she would have this smell of gardenias. Mm. And gardenia, that smell, if like people's, if you like travel to Mexico City, there's a places where there's an island where, or waterway, where there are like millions of gardenias, and it overwhelms you, and it's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's the thing. I was going to actually use the exact same word, is it's beauty, right? So I have a section also about beautify your life. And you can beautify your life, and you can exercise the art of chilling out with what you surround yourself with, your environment, to make very conscientious choices about what's appealing to you. And each section, and it's over 100 different sections of the art of chilling out, have, as you mentioned, a holistic prescription, which is a call to action. It's Mother Nature using items in nature, herbs, etc., to chill out and towards your holistic health. But I also have gemstones. I have feng shui, and each chapter also has an affirmation. So the affirmation for, like, beautify your life is, when I take care of myself, I honor my beauty within, which also helps me create a beautiful home as a place where I belong. So I'm really into creating an environment in your home. And if you're at work a lot and you have a workspace in your workspace, and bringing in flowers like gardenias, like roses, will help to bring that beauty, that yin, into your life. And it also is that wood element, which is grounding, but it's also aromatherapy. You know, and it's great for encouraging love and compassion and peace and self-worth. Jasmine is great also for spiritual awareness and self-worth and beauty. So these things are just, they're natural, they're in nature, you're bringing the outdoors in, and yes, you are healing effectively, and, you know, just incorporating and in unison with and harmony with Mother Nature. So you're not required to make the time or do anything different. Sometimes you can just bring something in and put it on your desk or put it on your nightstand, and that enhances your well-being.
And it will amaze people who come, like, by your desk and you have something like that. I've always had stones, so I was really thrilled when you have an idea for gemstones along the way, because growing up, as I did on Lake Superior, we used to spend our summer days collecting agates. So I have a large collection of agates, and I love stones. And just to have a beautiful stone on my desk and to touch it every once in a while, that is really grounding.
Yes, it is. And all agates have healing properties. And to just look at gemstones as just another tool that you can use towards your holistic health and emotional well-being. Some people kind of take it for granted, or they might be, oh, I don't know anything about that. But you don't have to know much about it in order to just keep it around or put it in your purse or hold it in your hand or put it, again, on your nightstand or on your desk. And just even appreciating the beauty of that, but each gemstone has different properties. So, like, I love tiger's eye because that increases confidence, and it also helps you to release and reduce fear and anxiety, you know, and it's a beautiful stone. And these are all things in nature, you know, that are readily accessible. And even the Mother Nature section, these are herbs that most people already have in their kitchen.
Exactly. They're not expensive. All you have to do is go to the vegetable market and get a few pots of rosemary. I love to have rosemary on the kitchen counter right there, because it's just so much better to have it, the real one, you know, instead of dried. If you're going to, like, fry potatoes and you cut some rosemary, real rosemary, oh, it makes the whole room just, like, brighten up.
Absolutely. And rosemary is another great one for, like, stimulation and spiritual awareness. And they have a very potent and powerful aroma that you can't quite explain necessarily what it does to you, because each person reacts to each herb or flower differently, but there are generalized properties of each one.
And I'm telling people, natural, not the ones that come in a spray can, please. Those don't.
Yes.
They're just going to give you a headache. Really.
Absolutely.
It doesn't cost a lot of money to have a real flower. It's not difficult, and it's worth it, because it really does make a difference.
Oh, it does, and in its purest form, and in its most alive form. So a potted plant is a great example, as you mentioned, to keep by your window if you want to use it for cooking, because it'll last longer, it'll regenerate, it could be a forever herb. A forever plant for you.
Yes, some of mine, I've had some of my plants, I think, for 20 years, because, you know, over the years, they grew.
Absolutely.
So it's fun, it's healthier, and it's just so much better for your soul also, just to know that you have something living there on your kitchen counter that's not a bug. Now, I like the chapter where you have, it's called Drive the Car. So when I first saw the title, I said, oh, good. I love to go driving. And so I started the chapter. I thought, what's she going to recommend? Maybe the kind of car we should drive, which would make us happy. when I got married, my husband and I had a white Cadillac, and that, I can tell you, that made me very happy. But this one is, explain what car, is that a cat?
That's my kitty. She said, hi, I'll tell you about driving the car.
Well, that, yeah. What does she like to go?
She wants to jump in my lap.
That's all right. I like that. Having a cat is a relaxing thing.
Oh, it absolutely is part of it. Petting animals brings us joy, and our little fur babies. And she's part of accepting the change, which is part, that's drive the car. So it's perfect she came in. She, since the pandemic, she's always wanted to be in my workspace so much more than before. In my lap, on my desk. She never did those things before, but she did it a lot since the pandemic. And so I'm adapting to that change. So CAR is an acronym, C-A-R. The C stands for change acceptance. The A stands for adaptive action. And the R stands for relaxation and letting go. And it's recognizing that all these huge changes that we've been through, you know, it's unpredictable, there's uncertainty, there's a lot of change in the air. But we have to start off with accepting the fact that change is a constant and that these changes are beyond our control. So being able to accept these changes then leads us to be able to adapt. So we can take action and say, okay, how do I respond to this change? And that's such an important aspect, because you can adapt in a negative way or you can adapt in a positive way. We all have different coping mechanisms, but being able to adapt to change is part of how we move forward. And we need to move forward to get to the R part of the car, which is relaxation and letting go. So being able to let go of the past is a real relief. It allows us then to just not be stuck, not be in a constant state of worry and confusion, and to get out of that loop where we're wondering, when are things going to go back to how they were? It keeps you rooted in the past and stuck in the present, whereas if we're driving that car, we can bust through and we can adapt, accept the change, and move on, release the past. And that's also being able to let go of old behaviors, old ways of thinking, old ways of maybe somebody told you how you were or gave you limitations that you don't have anymore. So the affirmation for drive the car is, I adapt easily to change, knowing that it supports my highest good. Because we're meant to change. It's actually part of having a good life is when you have good changes, you know. And so there are, again, the holistic prescription, which includes a call to action, the Mother Nature herbs, gemstones, and feng shui. So really being able to adapt and create balance and harmony in that adaptation and acceptance of change process is important, so you can keep your chill. You can still chill out and relax no matter what's going on around you.
And I do like the feng shui aspect, because it's true that if you declutter yourself and have things just in the right way so that the stress of your material things isn't on you. You don't have an overloaded closet that when you open the door, right away you get all, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. You have to find that calmness. And I do want to tell people, if you have not gone to your, you know, if you're in the city, there is always a botanical garden somewhere near you. Just go to the botanical gardens and you'll get all of this right there. You'll just, the fresh air, the smells, looking at rocks, everything is there. And I like also, you mentioned about listening to the sound of water, whether it's a fountain or, you know, a running stream, or if you're lucky enough to be near a waterfall.
Yes, and water is one of the feng shui elements, too, that you can incorporate into your home and into your workspaces, again, to optimize that balance and harmony. And water also helps to create connection. It also helps you to release emotions. It's a carrier, and it also adapts to any vessel that you put it in. So by clearing the clutter, we're helping automatically. You're increasing your feng shui and the impact. You're able to expand your mind and think more clearly because you're getting rid of the old, especially dusty things. And when you clear clutter, you're getting rid of a past that doesn't suit you anymore, that you just don't need. So you're releasing and letting go, and that allows for all these other wonderful blessings to then come into your life.
And I liked, near the end, you have a chapter called See Yourself Multidimensionally. And that chapter, I think, is particularly important, that people look at themselves and look at the people around them and realize that, well, partly your book is an affirmation that you can do anything you want to do if you want to do it.
That's right. And everybody has unique blessings that they bring to the world. And to see themselves that way, that you're not just one thing or two things, and you don't just have one gift or one talent or one path in life. You have multiple opportunities, you have multiple gifts, and it's really about self-knowledge, right? And living a great life with intention. You know, who says you have to just be one thing? You don't. You're many things. So really being able to tap into that soul voice, telling you that there's more to life than just maybe the surface stuff, than just a label.
Well, you've certainly done it. Angela D. Coleman, I really think you're fantastic. Of course, you're brilliant. I just think about all that you've accomplished already. And now with this book, The Art of Chilling Out for Women, 100 Plus Ways to Replace Worry and Stress with spiritual healing, self-care, and self-love. I think you're going to be reaching a lot of women out there. And one of the things that is so important that we set a standard for, you know, everybody wants to be a better person. And if we start with ourselves, then we can influence other people to follow the same thing. And you have done a beautiful job. This book is so easy to read and so much fun to read. And I as I said, I love it, especially for me, the gemstones, all the different gemstones. I was so happy that you got so many in there. Really a fantastic book, Angela. Thank you so much for joining me today. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
I do. My website is angeladcoleman.com, and my agency, my nonprofit that I run, is called sisterhoodagenda.com. And I'm so honored by your kindness, and I appreciate your kind words. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And I do want to mention your nonprofit, because you are really doing really fantastic work, because there is so much to do to make people understand each other and the people around them. And we all have to just find some more happiness and spread it. So you're doing a great job with this book, Angela. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Oh, I like this book. It's pink and blue, and it's very pretty, and I love it. It's, well, I love agates. So you will definitely want to read this book. Now, we're going to play a book buzz that Rita Moreau just did for somebody very special. So we'll play that, then we'll have commercials, and I'll be right back.
Hello, fellow mystery lovers. This is author Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with a mystery that will keep you turning the pages. Carol J. Perry's Now You See It. Sometimes 13 is a lucky number, and for fans of Witch City Mystery Series, it is, with this latest installment that features Lee Barrett, the program director for Salem's WICH-TV, in Now You See It. Lee and her husband, Detective Sergeant Pete Mondello, are settling into their new home. The honeymoon is over, and Lee is back on the job as program director for WICH-TV. Recently promoted to historical documentary chief executive, her first project is to promote Salem's new international museum. Seems easy enough. She loves looking at their collection and doing research about Salem's long-ago days as a shipping capital. That is until the driver of a truckload of antiquities turns up dead. Soon, Lee and Pete are dredging up clues along with a hardy crew of helpers. Aunt Ibby, a former librarian, offers her advice, while a local practicing witch, River North, has some ideas too. And of course, Orion, Lee's clairvoyant cat, has his own ideas. But when a ship model in the exhibit's collection appears to be haunted, Lee will have to dive into her own treasure trove of psychic gifts. For author Carol J. Perry, juggling details and coming out with twisty plots is her specialty. After all, she was born on Halloween Eve in Salem. Special thanks to Kensington Publishing for another great cozy mystery from Carol J. Perry. Pre-order Now You See It by Carol J. Perry and expect the unexpected in a mystery that features a memorable cast of characters and lots of page-turning fun. This book will be released on September 26, 2023. Now You See It! Book number 13 in Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mystery Series is available online. This is Rita Moreau, author of the Ghost and Camper Cookie Mystery Series, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions, go to our website, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. Buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. And I am back with my next guest, Angeline Bouley. And the name of her book is Warrior Girl Unearthed. Hi, Angeline.
Hello.
Wow. What a cover. They really did a great job for you on this cover. It's beautiful.
I agree.
Oh, wow. It's embossed, gold embossed. You know, that's really impressive. It's fantastic. I love holding a book with a beautiful cover in my hand. So, wow. Well, of course you deserve it because you are somebody special, very, very special. And I want to say that, you know, the thing is, of course, your previous book, Firekeeper's Daughter, was, I think it was the number one New York Times bestseller for quite a long time. It was on the best-selling list. And it's taken you a little while before you came out with a new book, but I know everybody's excited about this new book, Warrior Girl Unearthed. It's something, wow, it's impressive what you've written here. You're a fine writer. I mean, of course, we all knew that from the time of Firekeeper's Daughter. But tell us about this new story and about your main character, Perry Firekeeper Birch, because I love that name. And, of course, it reminds me of birch trees.
Yes. So readers met Perry and her twin sister, Pauline, in Firekeeper's Daughter. The girls were 6 years old. And now it's 10 years later. The twins are 16. And Perry reluctantly accepts a summer internship through her tribe. She's placed in the very last opening and is working in her tribal museum. And that's where she really learns about Native Graves Protection and Repatriation Act and learns that a local college is dragging its feet on repatriating ancestors back to the tribe. So these are human remains and sacred items that have ended up in museum archives. So I pitched the story as Indigenous Lara Croft, but instead of raiding tombs, Perry is raiding museums to return stolen ancestors back home.
And it's an exciting story. Let's take a step back and let's talk about where this book is located, where the setting for this book, because it is set in one of the most beautiful places in the world, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. You have to tell people a little bit about the absolute beauty of the Upper Peninsula.
Well, you cross over on the Mackinac Bridge and you reach the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Water, woods, waterfalls, all four seasons of outdoor activities, and just wonderful, the best people in the world.
And, of course, it's set on Sugar Island, which is sort of right there next to Canada. A lovely place, a beautiful place.
Yes. So that's where my dad's family is from, Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and Sugar Island. And Sugar Island is in the St. Mary's River. It is in between Sioux, Michigan, and Sioux, Ontario.
And it is so beautiful there. Well, all of northern Michigan, it's just, for many people who live or were born in northern Michigan, they're always a little bit sorry about that Mackinac Bridge. There's something to be said for it. But Perry, of course, the story about Perry is wonderful. I love her pops.
Oh, yep. Her dad. The twins call him Pops.
Yes.
And he's a great guy.
He is great. I love his instructions for driving. Because people who have not driven in northern Michigan don't understand the importance of being prepared. That section there where she is driving, and you describe the instructions he's given her is so much what my father did for me. Tap and tap and tap again, because you have to take into consideration that animals might be jumping across the road when you're driving in northern Michigan.
Exactly. And you don't swerve. You just slow down as much as you can. And, of course, where there's one bear crossing the road, there's usually two. So that's how the story kicks off with her crashing the Jeep that she co-owns with her sister.
Yeah, well, we don't want to tell people too much about that because we want people to read it. Because that's part of the fun. I love the reveal. You have a way to sort of carry people into the story. It's at parts, it's like very calm. It's very just, you're telling the story. You're telling this family story. As I said, I love the way the detailed instructions Pops gives, because my father did that to me, particularly driving in a blizzard. So I had all the instructions, all the preparation, all the mantra over and over, what to do. And so I fell in love with him. Tell us the relationship between the two sisters, because that's also beautifully written here.
Well, Perry is regarded as the laid-back twin, the twin that doesn't get riled up about, doesn't have a lot of anxiety, doesn't particularly care much for school, just loves to fish. That's her idea of a good time, is a day spent on a boat fishing. And her sister Pauline is very high achieving, high anxiety, and so their dynamic is pretty neat because they fight in the way that sisters fight, and then you know that there's so much love there too.
Well, Perry is my kind of girl because I was raised fishing. I was fishing from the time I was two, so that's also my idea of a perfect day, is to be on a boat fishing. Now, we're talking here, I want you to explain a little bit about the Ojibwe. Well, and the general, there are lots of, your Chippewa, but explain a little bit about mostly the Ojibwe and how it plays into this story.
So, yes, my tribe is the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians, and Chippewa is an anglicized version of Ojibwe. And so we consider ourselves Ojibwe, and that's where our families have fished in the St. Mary's River and Lake Superior for countless generations, and I love to set my stories there. I lived and worked in my tribal community for quite a while, and it's home. It's what I consider home.
And now the listeners might not understand this story about the bones, about the skeletons. Explain what happened here, why it happened, and I still don't understand. For me, I don't understand the problem of returning the bones. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
Right. So, museums and institutions acquire human remains and items either from archaeology digs or inadvertent discoveries when someone's constructing a road or, you know, something like that. But our country also has a history of a crania study that was done by the U.S. Army. And so there were actual grave robbers that would dig up, recently deceased Native Americans and send the skulls off to for research. And in 1990, Congress passed the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, so that it held universities and institutions accountable. They needed to conduct an inventory of what was in their collections, and tribes would be able to request the return of, you know, of the human remains that were traced back to their lands. And universities, too many of them drag their heels. They don't want to return the items. They want to hold on to them in the hopes that new technology will allow for more analysis and research.
It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. I mean, I can see if you want to have a few skulls around to do something. Maybe, you know, if they had I don't mean to be rude, but if, like, they had the skull of a major chief and they said, well, we want to clone him and bring him back, then that might be nice. But since they're not going to do that, I mean, what are they doing with these skulls? It's ridiculous.
Well, there's quite a few archaeologists and anthropologists that would probably give you a lot of answers of what types of research that they want to do. The issue is that, there are tribes that want these items back. And really, the end of the Indian Wars kind of was the start of collecting these items. And I think the underlying thing was relics of a dying people.
Yeah, but why the skull? I mean, why the bones? There's so little that they can discover from analyzing the bones anymore. It's ridiculous. And I'm glad Perry steps in and wants to do something about it.
The skulls, the crania studies were, I think it's called phrenology. It's a branch of science where they believed that differences in that different races had different skulls, and that by studying the skulls, they could obtain information about different races.
Okay.
So there is a very negative association with crania research.
Well, let's just say I think those people are stupid and they're idiots, and I don't care if they have college degrees and the PhDs. There's a limited amount of things you can do with phrenology, and why particularly they have to do Native Americans, I don't understand. I can think of a few people they could dig up, but not Native Americans, you know. The book tells this story, and people will be intrigued by it because I don't think most people know about them doing this stupid research.
Right, and when the law was passed, the Congressional Budget Office did released an estimate that it would take 10 years for all of the ancestral remains in institutions to be returned to tribes. Well, it's 33 years later, and there are still more ancestors that remain in institutions than have been returned. So we're really at an uphill battle.
Well, I want that all the scientists and all who are involved in this phrenology cranium study, I want them to donate their heads and see if they're going to like it. I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think if we say to this professor here, oh, well, you're doing this cranium study on Native Americans, but we insist that when you die, we get your head, and we can... they're not going to allow that. So this is sometimes, you know, people are strange.
Right. And, you know, Perry was the ideal narrator for this story.
Oh, perfect.
Because, you know, the topic can be quite intense. And so Perry is like a breath of fresh air. She, if she thinks it, she says it. She is impulsive. She is passionate about things that she cares about. And so she really made for a wonderful person to be telling this story, because she has such a lightness and an inner joy to her that I really needed to balance out the story.
Yeah, I'm glad you used that word joy, because that's what I also found in her. And I thought, because in many ways I relate to this idea of people who have not ever sat in a boat fishing on a lake at 5:30 in the morning when there's nobody else around, they don't quite understand the joy of that. But
I would agree with you.
You know,
I would agree.
You know, but I would think that you've felt that feeling, and certainly when you're on the island, you're in this gorgeous place where you are, just by the very nature of the nature around you, the birch trees. That's why I love the name birch that you put in, because that's my favorite tree. I used to lay under a birch tree for hours and hours reading as a child. And there's nothing as gorgeous as a birch tree.
Right.
So, yeah, the character's wonderful. Perry's great. The story's wonderful. And I think at the end, people will say, okay, that's it. Now, of course, they're going to turn this into a film. I understand. President Obama and Michelle Obama are taking this on as a project?
Well, they are doing Firekeeper's Daughter.
Yeah.
They acquired the book adaptation rights, and so they're interested in turning it into a series for Netflix.
Well, and I'm sure Warrior Girl Unearthed will go right along with it, because it's an interesting story. It's intriguing. I think people will enjoy it. As I said, as a writer, just as a writer, your writing is terrific.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love the way that you tell the story. It's written in first person, and we really get into the character. So you've done a terrific job with this book. But the important thing is, I hope at the end, at some point, people just like say, "That's enough. We've done enough of this cranial study. We know. You know, you can't find the beauty and the joy of the Ojibwe people by studying their skulls. I mean, this is ridiculous. What they have to do to find the beauty and joy of Ojibwe is to actually go to northern Michigan and meet some, and meet people who are still in touch with the land. And I, a little admission here, the first boy to kiss me was an Ojibwe.
Oh.
So I am very partial to Ojibwes. I was 5 years old, and he was 5 years old. We were in kindergarten, and we were doing a play, and he had to kiss me. And he did it with relish. I will say that we were great pals, and so my first kiss was with an Ojibwe, and I remember it fondly. And of course, in northern Michigan, this is where people have to learn about Ojibwe, not from their skulls, right?
Right.
Okay, well, again, I want to thank you. I don't know if your dad is like Pops. I hope somewhere you certainly learned.
Yes, very much so.
That's what I hoped. I hope that you had Pops was your dad, because I don't think you can make it up. He's so good. He's really wonderful. I just love him, and I think it's wonderful the way that you've written this book. So, Angeline Bouly, the name of the book is Warrior Girl Unearthed. It's a fantastic cover and beautiful quality. Also, the paper quality. You know, as somebody who loves paper, you know, Northern Michigan paper lover, they've done a fantastic job for you.
I'm so fortunate to be with Macmillan.
Exactly. Wonderful. And your website is?
AngelineBouly.com.
And it's absolutely a wonderful read. People, get this book. And Angeline, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay. You take care now. And are you headed up north for the summer?
Memorial Day weekend, yes.
I was just going to say, perfect time to head up there. And it's going to be glorious. So enjoy and sit under a birch tree and catch a trout for me. My goodness. I hope
absolutely
you,
I will, yes.
I hope you like the fish, because I certainly do. Anyway, again, thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. Oh, wow. Somebody who's going to be... Oh, I love it. Trout. That's... Oh, my goodness. I very, very interesting. Anyway, I'm glad we did the book buzz today for Carol J. Perry. Make sure that you pre-order her book. It's going to come out in September. But everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry, and or like for Angeline Bouly. The Obamas are picking her up. My goodness. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you so much, Ed, for everything. And everybody, remember, oh, he saluted me. I saluted him, because I should have been a general. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. It's gorgeous. Go and smell some jasmine. Go and smell something, gardenias. Bye-bye.